Hi, everyone. I'm Song Mei from Stanford. And I thought this seminar would be an informal discussion, but it happens that this talk will be recorded. hopefully, after this talk, we can have some discussion off the record.
I think we can tell them to.
Yeah.
You don't want it to
you
be
do
recorded.
Not put it online.
Right.
Yeah.
So, 2 days ago, we discussed like there are two scaling limits for neural networks. For these two layers neural network, these two limits both works. And these two limits we call on the web page, on the doc file we had, we call it particle limit and kernel limit. So by particle limit, it means this mean field theory for two layers neural network. By the kernel limit, it means the neural tangent kernel paper. So today I will first discuss what is the particle limit of neural network means. And then I will informally discuss a little bit about the connection of this particle limit and the kernel limit from my point of view. And on Friday, Matthew Yard will talk about the kernel. We'll talk about the kernel limit, and so we can discuss again then. So this is a joint work with Andrea Magnari and Fan-Ming Lin. This is a one-page motivation of the study of theory of neural networks. This neural network has been applied to many real-world applications in computer vision, generative modeling, and reinforcement learning. Its real-life application is actually video surveillance, generating arts, and robotics. So I don't think I need to like spend more time to explain why neural network is very important. So from the theory point of view, now people understand neural network has so many mysteries. And the fact is that usually in practice, the number of parameters people use in practice is much larger than the number of data. So we call that the neural network is often in the overparameterized regime. So the mystery is about optimization and generalization. So neural network is a highly non-convex objective. There could potentially be many local minimizers. Why will not gradient descent be trapped at bad local minimizer? And the second question is about generalization. So because there are more data, more parameter than data, in statistics, people will say that this overparameterized will overfit the data. But in practice, neural network seems not overfit the data. So what is the reason? And today I will partially explain these two mystery using these two layers neural networks. When I say two layers neural networks, I mean one hidden layer neural network. So two layer neural network is the terminology in like computer science. Sometimes people say this is a one layer neural network. But we say this is two-layer neural networks or one hidden-layer neural network.
I saw a paper in physics where they were calling it three-layer network.
So yeah, actually there are, yes, three layers. Input layer is data layer. And this is the hidden layer. And the output layer is a real number. So you can think about this as a binary classification problem. And today I will say in this hidden layer regime, the number of neurons, here it is 4, but I will take the number of hidden layer, the neuron in number of the hidden layer to be infinity. So this is today the regime we will discuss. So in terms of mathematics, we have a parameter theta from theta 1 to theta capital N, where each theta I is in D dimension. And our prediction function at data point x associated to parameter theta is just the average of each neuron associated to each theta I. And here, the scaling is very important. Here, I take the scaling to be 1 over capital N. So it's like in the law of large number regime. Why I say this is important? Because in the neurotangent kernel paper, their limit is taking this to be like 1 over square root of n. So because of this difference, the limiting behavior will be different. So here I will just comment a little bit upon this. But today, you want to keep in mind that this is order 1 over n. And after, like in Friday, you will see this is like 1 over square root of n.
So the last weights are fixed to 1, or it's?
I will describe. So this sigma star, an example of this sigma star is like you take the theta I to be AI and WI. AI is the output of the second layer. AI is the weight of the second layer. WI is the weight of the first layer. And this sigma function, you can think about it as a ReLU or any increasing activation function.
And AI are supposed to be of order 1.
Yes. And we assume a distribution of our data according to some population. But you can think about this population as empirical distribution over the data. Then the risk function is just defined as expectation with respect to the data of the square loss between the difference of response and the prediction function. So this is architecture of our neural network. In terms of this figure, we have these four arrows to be like A1 to A4, and these three arrows to be W1, W2, W3, and W4. So this is what happens in the figure. And before I discuss about the mean field limits, I'd like to present some related literatures upon these two layers neural networks. And I will, in 2018, there are many papers discussing about these two layers neural network. It's hard to like summarize them all in one slide. So I just list some important papers before like 2018. And I apologize if I miss some important work from the audiences. So, in terms of optimization, before 2018, people mostly explain this, you know, this optimization success through the landscape analysis. So these papers analyze the landscape of some special designed neural networks, maybe two-layer, maybe multi-layers, but the specialty comes from maybe the neuron, the activation function, the data, the number of data, and the width of the neuron. There are many choices you can make. So actually neural network is not a theory problem, it's a modeling problem. How you model the neural network, then you can prove some theory about that. In this paper by Freeman and Bruna, they show that like linear activation function, they call it linear neural network, has no sparse local minimizer. And in this work by Sotana Kotabi, Jamarmard, and Lee, they show that neural network, two layers neural network with quadratic activation has, in some regime, has no sparse local minimizer. So mostly this work show that the landscape is nice for these two layer for these neural networks. So any optimization algorithm, for example, gradient descent, stochastic gradient descent, can find the global minimizer or find a good minimizer easily. The difficulty of this landscape analysis is that because their conclusion would be strong, because they say mostly they say most of the local minimizers are good. So this is a very strong conclusion. So their assumptions should be stronger to get this conclusion. So their assumptions are mostly not so realistic. For example, linear neural network or like quadratic activation is not what people use in practice.
Well, which of these works treat the generalization error?
Some work here also talk about generalization, like this one, they analyze the landscape they design the landscape, and they can talk about generalization at the same time. But mostly, I think these works mostly talk about the landscape. In terms of generalization, so even before the neural network, people have some theory about generalization using Rademacher complexity bound. But now people already know that the Rademacher complexity bound is not tight, it's very loose. So people already abandoned the Rademacher complexity bound for neural networks. And these recent theory for generalization for neural networks are based on the margin theory. Basically, this says that if you can perfectly classify the data, and as long as you have a big margin, then the generalization error is small. So you don't care how many parameters. In this theory, you don't care about how many parameters you have. You just care if you can classify the data perfectly and get a big margin, then you can generalize. So these are the point of view of people like before this, before last year, 2018.
What are people scaling in this early work? So you mentioned the scaling that you're going to talk about.
Uh-huh.
The number of middle layers uh-huh. is only infinity, but info layer is finite. Uh-huh.
I mean,
all of
different
people follow the same scaling? Or?
They, no. I mean, they have their own scaling, but like, their settings are mostly different. Not, they are not tackling the same problem. They are tackling different problems. But they want to explain the same phenomena. Yeah. OK, so in this talk, before I talk about the mean field limits, I would like to discuss about a point of view of Joshua Bengio in 2006 in his paper, Convex Neural Network. So the first observation is that you can expand the square loss, and rewrite the risk function into the expectation of the response square plus the average of v function and double average of this u function, where this v function is the expectation of the response times one neuron. The u function is the expectation of two neurons. So here he did nothing. He just expand the square and rewrite this formulation. But the key observation of this expansion is that you can see that this risk function depends on theta I, the parameter, only through their empirical distribution, rho. So this motivates them to define a functional, a risk functional R of rho, where rho is a distribution in D dimension. So the risk functional is defined as expectation of response square plus the integration of V function and double integration of U function. What is the relationship of this risk function and risk functional? So the easy correspondence is that you have, if you look at the risk function evaluated at theta, then it's equivalent to the risk functional evaluated at the empirical distribution of each theta I. So we know that the minimizer, but because we know that the domain of this risk functional is larger, so the minimizer of the risk functional is smaller than the minimizer of the risk. But what is the relationship of the minimum value of Rn and R in another direction? So there is a simple lemma saying that if this u function is bounded, then actually the minimum of this risk functional is close to the minimum of the risk function up to error power capital N. So if capital N number of hidden layer neurons is large, then essentially you are optimized. If you optimize over this risk functional R, you are essentially optimizing over the original risk function Rn. So in their paper, they propose, by this observation, they propose an algorithm to optimize over this distribution rho, where he used basis function to discretize this rho and optimize over the coefficients. But in that paper, this approach is not a success. Although the observation is very...
It's not what?
It's not a success.
Why? In what sense?
Okay, so, I will explain. So the observation, this observation is very interesting. But this proposal to discretize this rho is a D-dimensional distribution. So you have a d-dimensional function. You want to discretize it on the grids or use some basis function. You need exponential to the d, more or less exponential to the d number of basis function to approximate this rho to be good. So that means you have already exponential number of parameters to be optimized. This is not a good scaling.
Suppose you can solve this optimization problem with respect to the measures, but you still need to, at the end, map to the state of vectors, right?
Right.
So
yes.
What do they propose in the mapping back to the discrete vectors?
One thing is that you only care about prediction. You don't even need to map back. But if you want to map back, you can just sampling from the distribution. Yeah.
So I had a question on that. So it can be shown that if you find the distribution for the theta, so that value of rho would correspond necessarily to a solution for the theta that he was asking for that would correspond to the minimization of the grid? So can't you find a typical solution that actually is a very bad minimizer in terms of the theta?
No. So you mean after you get this rho, how you get back to the theta, right?
You find a solution for the theta that is matching your distribution and then is not good minimizer?
No. So after you find this rho, you sample from this rho, you sample capital N number of neurons from this rho by law of large number kind of stuff.
You will
see that this parameter, this theta, although it might not be a minimizer of original problem, but the risk function is already small enough.
Okay.
Thanks.
Another
question. V and U are defined by doing the expectation value of X and Y.
Right.
Will you address what happens if you have only a sampling of X and Y?
So if you have an empirical distribution, you just average over the empirical data. It's not so different.
Okay. It's the rounding error if you have problems.
You can analyze that. It's not a.
It's not
important now.
But should we worry about the number of training data with respect to the number of parameters? If you're in the limit where the number of parameters is quite larger than the number of parameters.
Right. Eventually, you want to do this analysis. But for the motivation, I would like to keep this vague. Okay. So this is their proposal. In this work, we still adopt their point of view, but we don't propose to optimize over rho, but we just still run stochastic gradient descent algorithm on the parameter theta. And we want to see, can we give a scaling limit for the dynamics of this rho? Can we get a self-contained equation for this evolution of rho? So I think in the physics community, this is more or less obvious, but in machine learning community, this may not be so easy to describe. So we just consider the stochastic gradient descent algorithm. So the algorithm is just for each neuron theta I at each time k, we go to the negative gradient direction of the loss function associated to one data point. Okay, with some step size scaling. But these are not important. Our claim is that if we properly scale the step size, and let the number of neurons goes to infinity, the step size goes to zero. Then the empirical distribution of this theta I goes to a fixed limit. We call it rho t. And we can find a dynamics, self-contained dynamics for this rho t, which is a partial differential equation. Where you can think about this partial differential equation as a nonlinear transport equation with the effective field to be have a potential psi. But the difference between this equation with the linear transport equation is that this environment psi depend on the distribution rho. So that's the way we call it nonlinear transport equation.
So that's the typical structure of Lazar or McKean-Lazar equations, right? Where you have this nuclear interaction, mm-hmm. and somehow you only see the average. Right.
This is
particle,
this is totally equivalent to the particle dynamics, like couple interactions. So we call it particle limit.
But there's no diffusion.
No.
Basically, steepest gradient.
No, there is no diffusion, but I can show afterwards if we have a diffusion, what happens.
Sorry, so this is one, is the case of one pass, right? Each time is the example.
Sorry?
It's one pass dynamic.
One pass dynamic.
With batch of size one.
Right. Uh-huh. Yeah, you can think about that. So we have a more precise description of the distance of stochastic gradient descent and the partial differential equation with some assumption on the activation function and on the data. But these assumptions are very practical. And the theorem is the following. Suppose we sample initialization theta I zero independently from some distribution rho zero. Rho zero will serve as the initial condition for the partial differential equation. Then for any test function to be bounded Lipschitz, we measure the distance between the empirical distribution of SGD and the solution of PDE, testing by this function f. And we can uniformly bound the error along the path t from 0 to capital T by the following error term. And the error term has two parts. The one part is e to the capital T. Another part is this error term. And first, we will look at what is this term, which is a good term. So this term, error nd, scales with square root of capital D over n, maximum with d times epsilon. Here, capital N is the number of neurons, d is the feature dimension, and epsilon is the step size. So that means this error term is small as long as the number of neurons is greater than the dimension, the feature dimension. And the step size is smaller than 1 over feature dimension. So this is also practical. If I talk in the machine learning community, I will stop here and not describe this term because this is really the annoying term. So this term is e to the capital T. So T is the evolution time of the partial differential equation. So if your partial differential equation will evolve scaling with, okay, so the first observation is that this T will never scales with capital N because the T is the evolution time of the PDE to the minimizer of the risk. So we already take the large N limit. So this T will never scales with N. But perhaps this T will scales with capital D if you want to reach a smaller risk. So this is the problem of, there is a problem. If this T scales with D, even log D, your bound is not good, right?
What is K?
Okay, K is some constant depend on the boundedness of these assumptions. So you can think about it as a constant.
But not really if your sigma is empiric, if you use the empirical data to do that.
Okay, now our...
Because if you have the empirical data, the gradient of sigma would be big.
This one? We assume it's sub-Gaussian.
Yeah, but if you don't have access to sigma,
uh-huh.
Oh, this is just okay.
Yeah, we assume it comes from a distribution that is sub-Gaussian. If X is normal zero identity, then it's fine.
On Friday we heard this talk by Devin, right? So we had something similar, and I guess the reason why there's no exponential is because the PDE in the limit was very coercive. It tended to make things. Make any initial condition converge to the single limit.
I think in their problem, this T, they can converge in like order runtime.
Yeah.
The problem
yeah,
is very
that's
nice.
The point.
So
that's the point. Yeah. So I mean, in some sense, you'd expect the differential dependence to disappear if somehow the PDE is nice and you converge quickly to a
right. Or if you can show some contraction property of the approximation of SVD and PDE, then
you
can like.
So how does the bound, the Lipschitz bound on V and U enter?
How does this enter?
Yeah.
You mean enter into this?
Yeah.
So if it is bounded by K, then this K.
Yeah, so this is what I was saying. If now this is in U and V, then if you don't have really access to the measure, and what Mark was saying, you have only an empirical thing, then this U, this approximation in U and V that you have would have terrible Lipschitz constants.
No, this is your assumption of your population. If your
I understand, but your U, in practice, if you don't have access to your U or your V is an expectation of something. If you don't have access to this expectation, but only to an empirical approximation, typically the gradient, the Lipschitz bound for the approximation would be terrible.
Oh, okay, so here these assumptions are on
this
the population.
Okay.
Yeah, so you can, so you are saying if we can only access to the data, we can calculate this Lipschitz constant of U evaluated on the empirical data, it might be large. So it will be very large. It will make this bound to be vacuous.
Yes.
But this is not, but this bound is not, I mean, you cannot check this bound. If you have empirical data, you cannot check this bound. I don't tell you you can check this bound using empirical data. It's only assumption for the population. So if you believe the population is nice, then this bound is useful. At least useful when T is.
I think the potential difference is that you're considering the one pass case, where you don't really have access to the empirical loss function. You, every time you only use a fresh sample, and you don't reuse that sample. And then from that, you can essentially get the population.
No, not really, because he's in the loss, he has the function U and V, which are computed from something you don't have access to. If you have access to that, then you can do this, but otherwise,
but
you have something of the same nature, but with Lipschitz constant.
Okay.
But K is not computable, it's they're just.
No, but K will become terrible if your grad U and grad V are have bad Lipschitz constants, which is the case if you don't have access to the real thing.
I can only say you are right. If
all right, sorry for that.
So, I mean, this is a bound, so it's a theory, and we can only do this good for the theory. But in practice, this bound is quite tight. I can show you some figure, even a movie, saying that this approximation is pretty good. Okay.
Yes, this assumption, is it a big assumption on the input-output function in the sense that, I mean, if you know this, then it's not that one bit in the layer you can approximate any function, but the number of nodes can be very, very big if the function is not very big. So with this assumption roughly, you can show that the number of nodes that you need is proportional to D. So this.
Yes.
So this means that maybe this function, I mean, the input, in a certain sense, the input output function is really nice. You're doing this assumption, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if I understood Julia's comment, I think that there's something that doesn't quite connect, right? Because here you're talking just about the flow. You're not talking about a product like the theorems that say that you can approximate any continuous function within your network, right? It's just saying that you're approximating the flow level. But it's not saying how long it's going to take you to approximate, say, if y is equal to f of x, how long it's going to take you to approximate this f.
Right.
So it's telling you something different. It's telling you that whatever loss you have is similar to the loss along the flow, but it could be that the flow takes a very long time to approximate this regression function.
Yeah, that encode in the capital T. It's exponential in T, so it's
so
bad.
Yeah, it could be that, if it takes a long time, then you're going to need very large T, and then you're going to need very large n to compensate for that.
Yeah, so so this exponential in T is the drawback of this theory. So if anyone have idea to like eliminate this exponential in T,
but I mean, it's sort of what you get from okay, if
you
want to be
it's
back,
a
right?
Grown-up
right? Right? Yeah. So you sort of expect that to be in there.
Right.
In the worst case, right?
You cannot beat Grown-up except if you have info and some more information.
Exactly.
So if you wanna make this exponential to the t disappear, maybe you want to you don't want to use the interpolation. You don't want to use the mean field interpolation. You want to directly analyze the Markov process for the finite number of neuron case and give a hidden time kind of analysis. Then you, maybe in that case you are good, but that is too difficult. Okay, so now I summarize the message we had. We can approximate the empirical distribution by a continuous limit, and when we do gradient, stochastic gradient descent on the parameter theta I, it's equivalently doing the partial differential equation evolution in the continuous limit. So by this point of view, even we didn't say what is the behavior of this partial differential equation, we already answered two questions. So this all parameter transition, n goes to zero, n goes to infinity, will not affect this distribution dynamics. So that means this all parameterization will not affect the optimization path. And also this all parameterization will not affect generalization. So as long as this PDE can be efficiently optimized, I mean, can goes to a good minimizer and generalize well, then the stochastic gradient descent algorithm can go to a good minimizer and generalize well. And as long as this PDE doesn't go to a good minimizer and generalize bad, then SGD also generalize bad and goes to a bad local minimizer. So this is a message. Even we didn't analyze this PDE, it already tells us this message.
What is DD?
Oh, okay, distribution dynamics. We call this PDE distribution dynamics because it's an evolution of the distribution of the
things. Here, n going to infinity means that n must be in practice larger than something which is exponentially large in D.
No. For example, we have this bound, right? So if this error, we want this error goes to zero, if t is order one, we want this t goes to zero. We want this error goes to zero, then we need n to be greater than d. So it may not be exponential in d.
But you need it much bigger than d in order to just have to fight the exponential. In practice, you talked about the exponential prefactor that you need to make much less than one.
Right. Okay. So yeah, right.
So the fact that there is a limit means that the overpopulation does not affect generalization, but you know, for example, if you think the test error, you approach the limit from above or from below. So when you go toward n goes to infinity, does generalization improve or does not improve? So when you approach the limit from below or from above?
I don't know. Okay. So for this slide, I think for machine learning people, you need to explain them. But I think for physics people, you know, already know about this.
So the resistance and uniqueness goes at least to 67, not to 91. Not by Snipman, but by McKean.
Okay.
And then, of course, in the middle, you have Dawson and Gartner. So 91, everything was already completely finished on this.
Okay, thank you. I don't know this.
Yeah, but those are the nice lecture notes.
I know, that's not fully drawn up by us.
Yeah.
So you think
I... What?
Yeah.
I was born in 67.
So yeah, because you said this one because we use the proof, we use their... The
No, I know this very well.
So in terms of physics, this is a nonlinear transport equation describing the motion of particles with parameterized interaction. So this is why this is called mean field approach. In terms of mathematics, it's also known that this is a gradient flow of this risk function r of rho, but it's not a gradient flow in the Euclidean distance sense. It's the gradient flow in the matrix, in the Weissenstein metric space. And this point of view is also, this point of view is developed by mathematicians. The first citation should be like J.K. Oskin, right? And then like after that, the two groups of authors extend this J.K. Oskin, this gradient flow interpretation into the nonlinear transport equation. So originally, this JKO is about the Wasserman flow in the for the linear transport equation, and then they divide this stuff into the nonlinear transport equation. So till now, I didn't even tell you what is the behavior of this partial differential equation. The question is, does this distributional dynamics convert to the minimizer of the risk function? And the answer is, in general, the answer is no. But sometimes, yes. So this, in the following, I will describe two cases in which this distributional dynamics converts to the minimizer of the risk function. The first example, OK, there is a concrete example and a more general case in which we add some additional noise, then we can show that it converges. So let's first go to the concrete example. So this is the simplest example where we require more than one neuron to do the classification problem. So in this model, with probability half, we take the label y to be plus 1, and x to be a Gaussian distribution with mean 0 covariance sigma plus. And with probability half, y is minus 1, x is Gaussian mean 0 covariance sigma minus. And this sigma plus minus is a diagonal matrix with two subspaces. In the first subspaces, the covariance are different with tau plus square and tau minus square. In the second subspace, the covariance are the same. So you can only distinguish these two distributions if you find some function in the first subspace. And why we study this model? Because this model is invariant under the product of orthogonal group. So we can reduce the partial differential equation into a two-dimensional partial differential equation. And that equation is easier to analyze. So in this case, we make some additional assumption. We assume this activation is truncated ReLU. And we don't have the second layer coefficients. We fix the second layer coefficients and only optimize the first layer weights.
What is truncated ReLU? It's
a ReLU, and then you truncate it. We assume the dimension of the first subspace is proportional to the dimension of the second subspace. And this is a technical assumption for the theorem. So we show that there exists a T0, D0, and as long as time is greater than T0, dimension is greater than D0, number of neurons is D log D. Then with the casting coefficient initialized to be spherically symmetric. Then because the initialization is spherically symmetric, then the evolution will be like symmetric in the two subspaces. And we can analyze this partial differential equation and eventually give using the perturbation argument to give a convergence bound for the stochastic gradient descent algorithm. So we can show that the risk function will be almost a minimizer of the risk function up to some eta error. And this theorem tells us that we can use k equals order 1 over epsilon. Epsilon is a step size, and the t is order 1. So that means we have epsilon is order 1 over d, so we have order d sample to learn this, to distinguish this distribution, these two distribution. And the number of neurons we need is of order d log d. So this is a concrete example showing that using this partial differential equation, we can use this as an interpolation to analyze the gradient descent algorithm. But actually, this analysis is very difficult. I mean, even we can reduce the partial differential equation into a two-dimensional equation. Analyzing this two-dimensional PD is a pain. So this, I think this is not the only example we can analyze, we can use to show the nice property of this two layers neural network. Another example is by Adele and Merkel and Andrea. They show that in the case when like you want to approximate a concave function using a kernel kind of neural, then they say that the problem is a concave function estimation problem. So in that case, you can show that using this particle dynamics, using this stochastic Wiesen algorithm, you can converge to a good minimizer. Okay, so here, okay, so in terms of analysis, this is the only thing we can do, but we can do simulation also. We can solve the partial differential equation, and we can run stochastic Wiesen algorithm and plot the curve of the risk function to see how large the dimension, how large the number of neurons we need to make this approximation to be good. And this is an example in which D is about 300. The first the dimension of the first subspace is 60, number of neurons is 800, and the separation of a delta is the separation of the covariance of the first subspace. So this.
Can you say again, what's the data here? What's
SU? Okay, so the data is still this model. And
oh, okay.
Classifying the anisotropic Gaussian.
Can you also remind me what the difference between capital D and small d is?
Okay, capital D is the dimension of a neuron. Small d is the dimension of data. Usually capital D is d plus 1, where d plus small d plus 2. So it's almost the same.
But so in the iteration means the number of steps of stochastic gradient descent.
Right, the number of steps of stochastic gradient descent, and you properly scale the PD to match to let the curve match.
But that means that it's like having 10^7 sample.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right.
So really a lot in terms of
n. Right. Sorry.
It's a very big number compared to n, which is the number of neurons.
Right. Yeah, so, yeah.
Sorry, what is little d?
Oh, the dimension of the data.
What do you mean? Because capital D
is the dimension of the of each neuron. So capital D is W, the dimension of W and A and B, maybe.
Okay.
And little d is...
What is the little d dimension?
Right.
Why is this relevant here? Because in your model, you have essentially rotation symmetry. Mm-hmm. You only care about two variables. So little d only plays the role of SNR. No, then you scale the step size accordingly. Is that the case?
You mean why does this?
You know, I don't think little d is important here.
Okay, because in our bound, we show that we have some. We show that exponential kt square root over d over n. So I mean that's exponential to the kT. The bound is vacuous, but actually the approximation is pretty good. So I wanna give you all the like parameter here and let you get a sense what's the size of a parameter such that this approximation is good, already good in
the specialized setting. You know, with rotation invariance,
mm-hmm.
you agree this d doesn't matter, right?
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Little d doesn't matter, right, in this case, I would say.
Yeah.
Can factor these d out in essentially just study two dimensions.
Right, right. Yeah. But
the origin of this plateau in this risk function.
Oh, so you mean here?
Yes.
So the reason of this is that when you you need to escape a it's like you want to escape a saddle. So in the partial differential equation, you can see that if you use a delta function to solve the partial differential equation, it will approach a saddle, and then the delta function split into a distribution.
So does that plateau mean that each of the hidden neurons is kind of learning the same thing?
Yes. Something like that, yes.
But it's also remarkable that all the independently of delta, before you escape, the whole curve is only one curve. Everybody is doing exactly the same thing until you begin seeing something.
Right.
It could, I mean, this is not clear from what you said. There's something else in there, in this.
Because the first part, the risk is very large. I mean, there is no,
the risk
does not even, it does not count anything.
I understand, but it's remarkable how they don't learn anything in exactly the same way.
Yes.
Until they begin learning something.
Maybe it's just making the output very small. It's a mean square error if the output starts to be too much frustration. First you reduce it, and then you learn something like the sign.
I forgot what is the reason of this behavior.
But it's interesting. It's really interesting.
Yeah,
it's when you explore crap, you explore it in one way. Everybody does the same thing exactly. It's interesting.
It's interesting.
But that's like that's a very definition that is known in these, like, even two-layer networks were kind of small. That was discussed really like 30 years ago in the physics literature. It's called the specialization phase transition.
But the fact that everything goes together before is
yeah.
is clear.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, can you tell us why?
Oh, I mean,
well, in
it
those papers,
now you're
the right calculation, and you just see that the order parameter is such that everybody does the same thing. So, yeah, I didn't know you should.
Here you're in the opposite.
I agree. That's another thing. And you see the same.
Sorry, isn't it like, maybe I'm just. Isn't it like. You are in the three cases, you always have the same d and the same s0.
Right.
So the first thing you want to do is to disentangle which are the directions in which you can see the difference. And this is the same for the three like type of dynamics. And then you see the three different behavior as soon as you enter in the regime in which you are distinguishing the two Gaussians in those directions. I don't know, maybe. So maybe. Do a dynamics with a different d or a different s0, or maybe simply a different s0, you might see a difference in the first part as well. Would that be so?
I think so. But I really forgot the.
You sound like you don't want to speak without your lawyer or
something. I mean, the motivation I want to show this figure is not one of you.
Is there risk at the end zero? Is there a case where at the end you get zero risk or no?
Yeah, you can get zero, almost zero risk.
Almost zero or zero?
Yes.
You can zero, etc.
Is there noise in it?
It's not zero.
Yeah, I didn't. Can, you, can you pull back the volume, please?
Uh-huh.
And so.
You cannot get zero classification because there the distribution has overlap.
Yes.
So you cannot get exactly zero, but in large D limit you can get to zero.
Okay. But the final risk is somehow proportional to the weight of the overall.
The weight of
the volume of the overall.
Right, right. The risk will the volume of the lab. Okay, so the other plot is about when the partial differential equation fail to find a zero risk measure, then the stochastic descent will also follow the path of the PDE and also fail to find a good minimizer. And to plot this figure, we use a non-monotone activation function. So we take a kink of the activation function, and then we use two different initialization. The difference is the variance of the distribution of the initialization. They are different. So the variance is here. So the variance is 0.1 and 0.4. For variance to be 0.4, it successfully find a good classifier. But for variance, initialization variance to be 0.1, it fails to find a good classifier.
Can you explain why, how I'm missing a point here. How is it that the equations of the DD, whatever dynamics, misses you know, it's the evolution of a measure in fact, a convex potential. In the space of measure, it's a convex potential. Mm-hmm. You're following the gradient. Formally, that's exactly what it does. Take the gradient of this function in the infinite dimensional space of measures, follow it. Mm-hmm. When you have a convex thing, how do you miss going to the
okay, minimizers? It's not convex. It's not a geodesic convex stuff. So
it's not what?
It's convex, but not geodesically convex.
Yes, on the right, just there.
But still, to prevent a gradual descent to converge in a convex situation, it's hard.
So, for example, you have a double well potential. This is your function v of x. You can say you have x1 to xn. Follow the particle dynamics, follow the greenness dynamics along this potential. Then you say rho of x to be 1 over n, summation I from 1 to n, delta xi. Then you look at the evolution of this rho, then the evolution of this rho is just the transport equation. And with the V as the potential, the external field, the field is gradient V. So you can see that the Ritz function R of rho is integration of V x rho x dx, where this, and then the integration of rho x is 1. So this is a convex. This is a convex Ritz function. It's a linear Ritz function, and normalize it by 1. Yeah. So you follow the gradient flow of this Ritz function. You still cannot escape this local minimizer, right? So the reason is that it is convex, but not geodesically convex. It's not convex in Wasserstein distance.
OK, now I understand. It's the fact that it's a gradient flow in infinite dimension, but for a gradient, which is a different metric.
Right.
So then you have to be convex in the right thing, which
right.
is
okay. Right.
Do you understand why for smaller initialization variants it doesn't work, while for bigger it does? I would somehow expect exactly the opposite.
I don't think this phenomena, you want a particular explanation for this phenomena. We try some stuff and want to show an example when it fails, the STD follow it. But we don't really want to think why it happens like this.
Is
it like small variance could lead to you being confined in a well or some sort of potential, right?
Yeah, I saw some work of people like Avanis, like a bunch of other people, where they were analyzing dynamics in linear networks, where they were showing exactly the opposite, that they needed like small variance because otherwise, if they had big variance, a bunch of the waves were not changing any generalization. So this is exactly the opposite. It's a movie called this. I mean, although what you're saying might be true, but why is it not true in their case? And so. So this is bit, so your theory basically does not give you like a other way than solving the differential equations to know if you generalize well or not.
No, we don't provide a different way. We just want to explain this phenomenon.
Explain
why it.
Well, it does say that, I mean, somehow if you prove something about generalization, you're proving something about the PDE, so at least you don't run the algorithm from. So sometimes, I mean, saying that the two problems are equivalent.
So, okay,
which
gives you plus or minus.
Can be plus or minus, yeah, but it's like theory of computational complexity.
Okay. So I want to like quickly fix my talk and then like start to explain.
I'm completely confused because I thought that you're showing that you're approximating well the function. That's what it means, yeah. That the gradient descent, but that's not what you're showing.
Yeah, I want to show that the SGD, yeah, the blue dot approximate the black line. I want to just show this.
But I remember from like reading this Eric von der Meiden paper that we somehow understood that they actually do approximate well the function. wherever this is not true.
Yeah, it may not be.
None of these papers is claiming that these type of networks actually provide algorithm that provably approximates.
There are paper, not ours, or we have another theorem. You can look at another theorem maybe.
In this paper.
Yeah, in this paper, maybe you are not satisfied with them. So we add a noise, noisy grain stochastically descent to fix this problem. And then we consider the stochastically descent algorithm with additional noise, additional ID Gaussian noise for each neuron at each step. And then this corresponds to the partial differential equation adding a diffusion term. The diffusion term has a coefficient scales with 1 over beta, and beta is essentially the temperature. So we can also show that this SCD is approximated by this diffusion distribution dynamics.
And there is stochasticity in stochastic gradient descent.
Uh-huh. No, this stochastic stuff is averaged out by law of large number. It's not effective. The only effective is this part of noise. We select the step size such that the stochastic in the SGD doesn't appear, doesn't show in the equation. So this diffusion partial differential equation is also a gradient flow of free energy, and the free energy is just a risk function. This is a regularization term and minus the entropy term. And for the goodness of this diffusion partial differential equation is that it's probably approach the global minimizer of the free energy. So we have a theorem showing that T goes to infinity. the distribution will approach the rho star, which is a global minimizer of the free energy. So the reason for adding a diffusion term, what we get is make this free energy strongly convex in the GOD in some sense. So it's not a geodesically strongly convex, but the function itself is strongly convex in the Euclidean sense. So the fixed point of this functional is unique. So you can find a minimizer of this free energy.
So you have.
This might be very far from minimizing.
Yeah, this might be. This might be very different from minimizing R, if that depends on your beta. If beta is of order 1 over d, then you can show that the minimizer of free energy and the R is close. But if beta is of order 1, then it's not close. So.
But you also have like phase transition in that. I mean, depending on beta, you might get to this regime of strongly convexity or not.
No.
The finite value of beta.
No, for any finite value beta, you can show that the PDE converge.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And the times it takes to converge?
May depend exponentially in beta.
Yeah, so if beta is very small and he's minimizing the loss function, then
it takes
forever.
Yeah, it's exponentially in beta. Yeah, exponentially in beta.
Can be converged on D?
So beta depends on D, so the conversion time may exponential depend on D.
Uh-huh.
That's a may, but not but yuri is exponential in beta. So that's not a good. So we don't claim this is a good result because this. But we only want to show that we can use the PD as an interpolation to show that SD converge with some given like fixed amount of iterations.
Yeah, but this is a bit similar to as. When you add and then you do ridge regression or Tikhonov regularization, you're adding a term that's biasing your regression task, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you know that it has a regularization effect, it somehow helps you converge and makes the problem more complex.
Right. Yeah. It's similar to what you are saying. Yeah. So in the ridge regression case, you have a choice of lambda such that both of these two regimes are good. But in this case, this is not so ideal. You don't have a best choice of beta such that you can balance these two stuffs. So that is one dissatisfaction of this theorem. Okay, so I can conclude my talk. So today I introduced the mean field theory for this two layers neural network. And this distribution dynamics is essentially the dynamics of particles with pairwise interactions. This is in terms of physics interpretation. In terms of mass interpretation, this dynamics is a gradient flow in the Weissenstein space of some risk function or free energy. So this is maybe the first part of this discussion. So probably people know about this neural tangent kernel stuff. It's another limit. It's another mean field limit. It's called kernel limit. And in that limit, everything behaves better than what I described here. In that case, the dynamics is essentially a linear dynamics, and it can you can show it probably converge to the minimizer of the empirical risk function. So maybe the other part, the following part of discussion will. Okay.